When you think of lions, what comes to mind? Powerful beasts lounging about the savannah waiting for unwary prey, or a cartoon cub maybe playing out archetypal ideas of power and politics, or a tired-looking big cat at the zoo. Lions have fascinated humans for millennia, and writer Anthony Hamm has tracked down some of the most compelling lion stories from recent years in his new book, The Last Lions of Africa. Anthony, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you, Hilary.
Now, why lions? What is it about these animals that so fascinates you, as opposed to, say, tigers or ocelots?
Maybe I'll get to those later one day, but the simple answer is that lions are the most charismatic creatures on the African plains. That's the obvious reason why I've chosen lions. They are the animal that everyone wants to see when they're on safari. They're the animal that really captures the attention of the plains and captures the attention of every animal in an ecosystem. But there's a more serious side to that, and that is that lions are the keystone species. If you take them out of an ecosystem, the whole thing can unravel. And if that happens, what happens is that's the beginning of the end for many African wild places. There's also another aspect to it, and that is that if we want people to care about the natural world, lions are one of those creatures that can capture the attention. You may remember back in 2015 with the Minnesota dentist named Walter Palmer when he shot Cecil, and there was a global outcry. It showed that people really care about lions. And if we want people to care about wild places in Africa, we need to be able to protect lions.
And we'll hear a little bit more detail about some of these stories. Some of these lions are almost like characters in the stories that you tell in the book. But do you remember, Anthony, when you first saw a lion in the wild? What was it like for you?
I find myself, whenever I see a lion, and the first time was no different, I find myself completely caught up in the moment. And after it's all over, it might be I'm listening to a lion roar in the night, or I'm watching a lion. First time I saw a lion, it was hunting out on the plains of Amboseli, which is in southern Kenya, in the shadow of Mount Kilimanjaro. And I found that I don't know how long had passed, and I just found that I was no longer breathing because I was so enraptured by what I was seeing. And that's what lions do to us. Sometimes you see them, they are just sleeping under a tree. They're not doing very much. But when they have a presence that is unlike any other animal.
Yeah, it's raw power in abeyance, isn't it, for the moment?
It is, yeah.
I love how you write about what killing a lion means for the Maasai in their traditional culture, and it almost comes across as if those lions are a challenge, something that human beings have tested themselves against traditionally. Tell us about how that played out for one man that you met.
Well, as you say, Hilary, for the Maasai, the lions have always occupied a very special place in their culture. In some ways, lions are the way that the Maasai see themselves, noble, regal creatures. They see themselves as lions' equals. What that meant traditionally was that in order for a young Maasai male to prove that he was worthy of becoming a warrior, that he had the courage necessary to become a warrior and protect his people, he had to kill a lion. Now, killing a lion for the Maasai doesn't mean shooting it with a high-powered rifle. It means staring down a lion that's charging towards you and spearing it to death. And that's obviously requires great courage. This wasn't a great threat to lion populations in the past. This was something that was a rite of passage that was pretty sustainable, and obviously there were the elements of it that were quite disturbing, but it was quite sustainable. What happened was that a large number of the human population was growing in the area, and the lions were killing the cattle of the Maasai, and what happened was they turned into killing them for revenge rather than for ritual. And that's when the lion population started to be wiped out. One of these young men was Maitaranga, who I write about in the book, a young man whose father and his uncle had killed 15 lions between them. So he wanted to join them. He wanted to be like them. And he killed 5 lions. He was one of the greatest warriors of his generation. Unfortunately, what happened was on the fifth lion that he killed was a lion that he thought had eaten his cows. When he killed the lion, he cut open the stomach and realized that he killed an innocent lion. The lion hadn't killed his cows. And this led to a crisis of identity for him, because for him, the lions were noble enemies, not so much enemies, noble competitors that they could measure themselves against. And so by killing an innocent lion, he'd almost broken a pact.
And you write so powerfully about what that meant for him. It's not just a crisis that we might have here in the first world where we get a bit upset about it. It shook his whole identity as a Maasai. And you write really wonderfully about how that separated him from his fellow Maasai and led to him taking on this very unusual role with the Lion Guardians. Tell us how that worked.
Well, he was someone who no one could ever doubt his courage, and all of a sudden he was saying, I can't do this, I can't. And so his colleagues who would go out to want to hunt lions, he would make excuses, and they started to taunt him and call him a coward, and that's the worst thing for a Maasai warrior. So he really went into what I've described as a dark night of the soul. Fortunately for him, what happened was he heard about a conservation program that was happening in the area by two young American conservationists, where they had turned Maasai traditions around so that instead of Maasai killing lions to prove their courage and to prove that they were worthy warriors, it turned it around so that they would protect lions but also protect their communities from lions and warn herders when lions are around so that they could protect the cows. And in doing that, it gave him a new meaning. He was still proud of who he was as a Maasai because he was still showing his courage, but at the same time, lions were being protected and people were learning to live with lions. And that's one of the really clever, innovative programs that are happening in Africa, because that's where lions live. They live among people. They don't live behind fences in national parks.
We're talking with Anthony Hamm here, who's written the book, The Last Lions in Africa. And Anthony, the Lion Guardians are really important, aren't they? Because there's this web of factors conspiring against lions. There's the availability of land. There's the tricky balance of hunting and tourism and conservation and these traditional relationships to the land and its animals. I was really struck by what you write about hunting, though, that it considered a necessary part of wildlife conservation and management. How does that work in a well-managed situation?
I should say from the beginning, I find hunting personally to be something extremely difficult. How anyone could prefer to see a lion mounted on their wall than on the plains of Africa, it's not something I understand. But I think most conservationists would think that. What hunting does actually do when it is well managed, as you say, it provides value for the local people, for wildlife. Someone who wants to come and shoot a lion in places like Botswana will have to pay up to $50,000 for a permit. That money goes directly into the local community. Another aspect is that if you can make a hunting area, that area will be protected from encroachment by agriculture, by herders and so on. And so people are encouraged to protect the land. Many of these are not places that are beautiful places that you might want to do safari tourism in. So it provides an alternative form of land use. And something like 80% of lions are actually within the boundaries of hunting concessions, 80% of wild lions. And so unfortunately, it's almost a pact with the devil. If managed well, it can become an important part of a conservation program. Problem is when it's not done well, and too often young lions are shot, which causes great social disruption in lion populations and can actually lead to the breakdown of lion society. You have quotas that are not adhered to, and so on. And that where hunting does actually work, it's only in very few places. In most places, it's not managed well, and then it does cause damage to lions.
And you mentioned Cecil the lion before, the world famous tragic lion. Tell us how that worked, because that wasn't well managed at all, was it? That was a completely illegal hunt.
It was. The concession where that took place was just outside a national park called Wangi National Park in Zimbabwe. And what happened with the Cecil hunt was that concession didn't have a quota to shoot lions. So no one expected any hunting to take place. All of the hunting that takes place in those concessions is within 1 kilometre of the park boundary. So these are lions that are used to humans being in safari vehicles, getting up close. They're not afraid of humans. But they cross the railway tracks. They're in a hunting concession. In order to carry out the hunt that was carried out by Walter Palmer, they were supposed to have a national parks person present. They were supposed to have a permit to hunt with a crossbow. They didn't have any of these things. And also, part of the law in Zimbabwe, when you shoot a lion, if the first shot does not kill the lion, then the professional hunter is supposed to finish the lion off to put it out of its misery. Now, Walter Palmer's first shot injured Cecil, but he was not killed. But he'd given instructions for it not to be followed up by the professional hunter. So they went back to their camp, slept the night, and then went the next morning so that Walter Palmer could finish it off with his crossbow. So there were lots of things that were both distasteful and illegal about the hunt.
And they got away with it for quite some time too. I understand that somebody walked the collar that Cecil had been wearing around for a day or so to mimic a lion's movements. What do we think about regulation and enforcement that's meant to keep lions safe after an incident like that?
The problem is that that was illegal, and so there's not much more you can do in terms of the laws. And a lot of the conservation community in Zimbabwe are working very closely with the hunters to ensure that it's happening. And there are a lot of hunters that are following the rules. It is about enforcement, and it is about these countries and these national park authorities having the resources to be able to enforce, to be able to follow these things up. Because Zimbabwe doesn't want to lose its lions. They also don't want to lose the income that comes from hunting. And where it works well because the money is going back into the community, but they really need a lot more resources in order to be able to enforce these laws that you know should stop hunts like this.
Anthony Hamm, we've got a few minutes left. I'd love to hear about this very lonely lioness that you found in Zambia. Tell us what was unusual about her.
She's a lovely story. She was a lioness who in the west of Zambia, the national park is called Liwa Plain, and the national park had been wiped out in terms of its wildlife with poaching. It was right next to the border with Angola and civil war. For almost 10 years, she was the only lioness that was left, and that's remarkable because lions are social animals. They require other lions to hunt. They require other animals for company, and she survived somehow. What ended up happening was that when a ranger called Jacob Tembo, who I interview in the book, when he went back in to look for lions and they found her, over time she came to be almost to see him almost as her companion. And she would lie down next quite close to him. This is a wild lion. Later, when they brought back in more lions through an organization called African Parks, she protected Tembo from other lions who tried to attack him. One night he even woke up and he was lying in his tent and he felt this rumbling, and he thought there was an earthquake, and he realized that this lioness was lying on the other side of the canvas up against him and was actually purring. Aww. And so there's this remarkable relationship that she'd had no lion company for almost 10 years, and she chose him as her companion. And together they became this almost odd couple, if you like. And because there is a serious side to it in the sense that she's an example of what happens, how difficult it is to bring lions back once they're gone. But they wouldn't have been able to bring lions back into that community if she hadn't survived all that time on her own. So she acted as a bridge between the past and the future. So it's quite a remarkable story.
And there were some ups and downs when they did try and reunite her with some other lions. But I love the story about how she got between Tembo and a couple of male lions that they'd brought in and just laid down the law for them as well.
Yeah, they were filming one night and they drained the spotlight on their battery. They were filming Lady Liwa, Tembo, and a filmmaker. And he was these two wild lions that had been introduced into the ecosystem. They weren't like her. And so they saw these two people on foot trying to push start a car, and they charged her. And charged the car, and they were on foot. And she jumped in between them and swatted at them and told them to stop. To see what could have happened is you can just imagine what happened later that night. Tembo was asleep in his tent and he heard the two lions coming, or heard lions coming, and they started to rip at the canvas of the tent with their claws and ripped the tent open with him inside it. Now, he had seconds, obviously, to survive, and he grabbed his gun, shot into the air, and they ran off. But that's normal lion behaviour. That's what lions do when they find someone on foot in the wild, and so it just does highlight how remarkable she was.
We've only got half a minute or so left, Anthony, but how optimistic are you for lions? I mean, they used to range up through Turkey and as far as India, and now there's just these tiny pockets in Africa. Do you think they can survive?
Look, we've lost 90% of the lion population. They're only surviving 5% of where they used to live. So we're at a critical moment. The next two decades will be critical. I am optimistic. I think we can save lions. There are enough really good programs out there. I think people care about lions. And if people can support these programs that are doing this really innovative work protecting lions but also protecting human communities, then I think, yes, we can do it. We have time to do it if we care enough.
If we care enough and if we do our research. Anthony Hamm, thanks so much for joining us on Life Matters today.
Thank you, Hilary.
Anthony's book is called The Last Lions of Africa, and we hope that it's not a portent.